Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, everybody. It's Rob Benedict.
And I go by the moniker Richard Speight Jr.
And we're talking about Supernatural Season 3, Episode 6, Red Sky at Morning.
You remember that song, Red Sky at Morning? Red Sky at Morning? Oh, oh.
I really was thinking. I was like, wait, what song is that? Wait, that's not really a song, is it?
It's by The Fix, and it's Red Sky at Night.
I always liked The Fix. Two X's.
I love The Fix. Reach the Beach, great album.
Yeah, but hey, before we get into The Fix.
Welcome to The Fix Podcast, everybody.
If you haven't yet, be sure to rate us on whatever platform you're using.
Unless you're going to rate us poorly, in which case, back off, mister.
Don't rate us. Yeah, no, rate us. Let people know how much you're enjoying the podcast. Because we know if you've made it this far, you're enjoying the podcast.
And let me tell you something. Right now, Rob and I are going to rate you 10 out of 10.
Yep. Best listeners ever.
Now return the favor and go rate us highly.
So Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, Podcast, McPod, whatever.
McPod is not a thing. Does McDonald's have a podcast?
Give us a 5 stars or a thumbs up.
Hold on, don't blow past McPod. That's made up, right? That's like McSandwich.
I don't know, man. I listen to my podcast on Podcast McPod.
You've never heard of McPod? You literally are lying to the people. Let's not do that now. Let's not start lying to the people.
Oh,
that's McWrong.
Especially now when we're asking them to give us a good review.
Right.
Okay. Red Sky at Morning. The infamous ghost ship episode.
Is this infamous? Is this one people talk about a lot?
Well, this is my character in my first episode, I reference a couple of episodes and I apologize for them. And Bugs is one of them and Ghost Ship is one of them.
No.
Yeah. So,
but you call it Red Sky at Morning or you call it Ghost Ship?
I said Ghost Ship. Oh my God. And the Ghost Ship? I'm so sorry. You know, and it was Eric Kripke's way of sort of apologizing for the episodes he didn't love.
Oh, man, this is all coming together. Okay, I interrupted the summary. Let's go to the summary, but yeah.
And that he knew fans, you know, had mixed reviews about. All right, so Sam and Dean head out to investigate a series of dry land drownings and phantom ship sightings at Sea Pines, Massachusetts. They visit Gertrude Case, the elderly aunt of the most recent victim. Gert references that her niece may have seen a phantom ship prior to dying and asks if they are working with Alex. They lie and say, yeah. Yeah, we are. This warms her up to the guys, especially Sam. Alex ends up being Bella, who says that she is working for Gertrude and that the brothers better stay out of her way. Soon, another person dies after seeing the phantom ship. The boys learn that the victim's brother also saw the ship. The brother refuses Sam and Dean's protection, but soon witnesses a sailor's ghost and suffers a dry land drowning while trapped in her car.
It's a her? I thought it was a him.
It's his car. Well, maybe the car belonged to his wife or something.
Okay, good. Good point.
Bella shows up where the brothers are crashing and tells them that the phantom ship is the Espirito Santo. And she's there.
Espirito Santo.
And she's there for an occult item. A sailor was hung on the ship by his own brother, the captain.
There's nothing more appealing to Rob than hung sailors.
Well, I was going to say, you remind me of the captain hanging your own brother. The sailor's hand was removed post-mortem from the hung brother, therefore creating a hand of glory. Oh, boy.
I know that the brother was hung, but how did he die?
Was the hand of glory. It's a good thing it wasn't in a hole. I had to go to the glory hole to find the hand. But Okay, so.
Oh, my God.
The sailor's hand was removed post-mortem, therefore creating a hand of glory, a supernatural relic that can unlock any door. However, the relic hand is currently on display at the local maritime museum. Bella talks Sam and Dean into the three of them working together to retrieve it. Gertrude helps them obtain invitations to a formal benefit at the museum. Sam has to keep Gertrude, quote, entertained, and he gets completely groped all over by this woman, while Bella and Dean steal the hand. Once stolen, Bella double-crosses Dean and steals it for herself to sell to a bidder. However, after selling it, she sees the Phantom ship and knows that this is a signal of her demise. She goes to the brothers for help, who eventually agree. Sam comes up with the idea to summon the ship's captain, the one who had the sailor executed. The vengeful sailor's spirit lunges for the spirit of his brother, the captain, and they disappear in an explosion of water. Bella shows up and gives the boys $10,000 as a thank you. I wasn't sure if it was $5,000 each or ten to each or five.
I thought it was five, but yeah, I guess it was five each. That's good.
Dean heads to Atlantic City to spend the money. Sam reluctantly travels along, resenting that Dean isn't more concerned about his contract to go to hell.
Although many people on the East Coast consider Atlantic City to be hell. So
that's true. Good point. So this is an infamous episode.
Now it's time for the RRR. Rob and Rich review.
Okay, so I'll dive in here.
Good pun. Look, ghost ship, dive in.
Dive in. Hey, I'm going to get my toes wet and start. I did not love the episode. It was not one of my favorites. It was almost funny, really. I mean, it was just cheesy. It was really cheesy. Like, there were shots in it that you go, whoa, wow, this isn't supernatural. Like, the woman in the shower at the beginning, the way that she dies, she does that, like, hair flip and really, like, sexy shower washing.
Yeah.
And the people dying, drowning on dry land, where they're just like basically throwing up water, was kind of weird. Yeah, if I'm looking for positives, I appreciated the sort of the stealing of the hand was very sort of James Bondy. The boys donned the tuxedos, but the whole bit with Gertrude and Sam was awkward. A very pretty older woman too, and I was almost offended for her that Sam was so grotted out by her, because now that we're all a little older, I'm like, come on, she's a pretty older lady.
Yeah.
So it wasn't my favorite. You all know how much we love this show. This would be up there with the sort of worst five.
Yeah. So I'll tell you this right now. Right now, listeners to this podcast, don't lambast us with Budyard and Jensen, because it's a given that they're great in every episode, including this one. They go out there and they do their darndest. Mofo is a turd. I mean, in a big way. It was a terrible episode. We've watched nothing but greatness with occasional, like, really goodness. Finally, here into season three, we have our first shart. I mean, it's just awful.
It's bad. It's really bad. I'm a big Lauren Cohan fan. She's pretty to look at. But again, it just nothing could save this episode. I noticed also it's written by someone I didn't recognize and directed by someone I didn't recognize. Do we know Cliff Bowl? Did you ever work, or Lawrence Andres wrote it?
I don't know their backstory. No,
I'm sure they're very talented. But again,
I don't think it's one thing that fell apart here. I think it's everything fell apart here. I think the idea isn't great. I think the way it's executed. I don't like the character Bella, which I know offends Rob, because Rob loves that actress so much. And it's not a slight on her. She's a wonderful actress. I just think the character is like this sort of one note, like, hello, fellas. You know, I'm going to be sassy.
It doesn't offend me. No, I don't like the character Bella is a thorn in their side.
Well, it was a thorn in my side, and I just thought the episode was really dumb. And the whole Sam plot with the elder lady, like you say, is so almost awkward. Offensive, because you're like, all right, maybe don't be so recoiled with horror.
I know.
Like, kind of sophisticated elder lady finding attractive, but also, hey, sophisticated older lady. It didn't work for me.
Yeah, I felt sorry for the actress, because, like, she doesn't get paid in the best light.
No, I mean, like, if every scene, like, now at this point, when you touch Sam, he's gonna projectile vomit all over the back wall. So be sure that you lean back so I get hit by the barf.
I know.
That's not cool. And like I said, she's a really attractive lady. Just has to be older than Jared.
Also, there are times when I feel like the brother's relationship, when it's great, which is 90% of the time, it's when it's complex. Like, when they're talking about Sam is trying to save Dean and Dean is in denial and kind of like living on the edge and what's going on right now with their relationship. I love that stuff. What I don't like is when it's boiled down to, like, Dean is like, oh, Sam, you get the ugly girl and I get the hot one. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah,
just
it becomes
seems
very
like
happy days.
Sophomoric. Yeah, exactly. And just not evolved.
Here's a question for you. And I don't remember if it was this episode. I think it was, or it was the one 305, but where Dean says, could you be any more gay to Jared?
Ah, yeah, it was the previous episode.
I leapt out of my skin.
I literally, my heart stopped. I was like,
what was, you know, which episode was that?
That was the last one. The one,
dude,
that we
at five.
We
so just, I know we're harkening back to that, but
yeah, no, thankfully we've evolved. I'd like to think we have evolved since then, but
certainly TV is well more aware. Way more aware.
Yes.
And would never make that joke.
Oh, it's so offensive. But,
oh, it's so offensive.
Yeah. But what it also does is it boils down the relationship of the two brothers in sort of a cartoon form that I don't think works.
And the funny thing about it is you're exactly right. It goes to what you were saying. And if you go back and look at that beat, it's Sam knowing something very detailed, important about art or something.
About fairy tales. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So you're going, could you be any more gay? You're like, you mean incredibly informed on a very specific topic that's going to help us tremendously in solving this crime? I mean, it's even a weird use of it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it just doesn't work at any level.
Yeah. But yeah, in this episode, too, it's like, I don't love that part of it. I love getting into the, again, just the real meat of what's going on with them in a complex level.
Yeah. This ain't it, man. Everybody barfing water in the car and, you know, the lead singer in excess coming back
to
kill everybody.
It's almost funny.
Michael Hutchins in a pirate outfit coming back to.
Yeah. And then his brother, who did not seem period at all.
Dude, his brother seemed like they're like, we forgot to cast this role. Hey, Jerry over at Crafty, can you throw on this Nehru collar?
Yeah.
A shirt he's like, and
he's like, brother, you wronged me. And then he's like, oh man.
I know, dude. He was
I'm
so
sorry.
Not period piece.
I'm like, sorry, buddy. Yeah.
That's on me.
Yeah. Do you remember those things when we had when we were kids where it was a man's bald face and head?
Yeah.
And you would take the magnets and you'd put a beard on him?
Yeah.
And the beard
like
pieces would kind of
Mr. Scratchy Face or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuzzy face.
We will put us a picture on Patreon so people know what I'm talking about. That's what I give this episode.
And I'll tell you right now, you know what review I give this, Robbie?
What?
The Telly Savalas, Mr.
Man.
Clean.
Oof. Wow.
You ever see the band Midnight Oil? The front man, lead singer of President of the United States of America.
Bald face, bald head.
Curly from the Harlem Globetrotters.
Uh-huh. That's as low as we go, kids.
That's it, man. Barring ripping the skin off the face, that's as low as we go. And the funny thing is, I know you said that like your character references two episodes being not great, one of them being Bugs. Bugs did not bother me like this episode. Bugs,
true.
I'm like, oh, Bugs is fine.
This one was not that bad. Yeah. Yeah. Mr. Fuzzy Face.
So this one gets a Mr. Fuzzy Face and a Telly Savalas, Mr. Clean, Midnight Oil, Curly.
Yeah. All right. Guys, we have such a pleasure person.
We have a pleasure person? Bravi, I feel like that's, I don't think that's what she does for a living.
Okay.
Very expensive.
She's a friend,
for that.
She's a really good friend of ours. We know her, and you will probably know her from Stargate, from Supernatural, the show Kings of Con, the 100, Riverdale, and many other shows. It's the
and in Rob's dream world, you're a pleasure.
You know what?
Person.
I'm trying to be a professional here. Would you just
failing hashtag fail.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Elena Huffman. Hi, Elena.
Hey, thanks. That was the best introduction ever.
I never do it smoothly.
But the good thing is you do it every week.
True. So I'm consistent.
There you go. Speaking of pleasure person, I just played a prostitute on Riverdale.
You did?
Really?
Hey, see? I said it on because I knew.
You knew.
You do a bunch of these, right? I mean, you've been Riverdale's like you're.
Yeah, this is the second season I'm on. It's the last season. I'm not sure what they're gonna do. I thought they'd write more for me the way they sort of pitched me last season. And then honestly, there were like a couple episodes that I came in that I literally said like four words and I was like, why am I here? And it goes like that sometimes, but yeah, I've been very fortunate. I remember one time I was going through the TSA, the customs and not TSA customs, leaving Vancouver. And the guy asked me what I was doing there. And I was like, oh, I'm an actor. I was on a show. And he goes, don't tell me you're on one of those terrible CW shows.
Oh my God.
I was like, I'm on seven of them.
First of all, guy who, you know, customs officer.
Yeah.
Let me see
those
your
are the kind of guys.
But it's not that great.
Those guys make me crazy.
Probably a bunch of security camera footage. That's all you got.
That's all you got. It was kind of funny.
And secondly, literally the most populous native crop of Vancouver is CW television. I mean, like, good grief.
That was his in. He was really smooth.
That's
well,
it. I'm out.
Here we are. We're talking about season three of Supernatural.
Hold on, bro. You skipped one big thing. I think people need to be reminded if they're feeling tension through their speakers, it's because Rob Benedict and Lena Huffman have played husband and wife.
Oh, yeah.
For people who forget about Kings of Con and the tension therein.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's on Amazon Prime for anybody who hasn't seen it.
If you're wondering, you should go watch Kings of Con.
Yeah.
Kings of Con and see the heat between Rob Benedict and Lena. I was just a lowly director aiming the camera, but you two had many a scene together.
That's right. I forgot I worked with you as a director.
There you go.
Yeah, that's the kind of impact I have on performers. They forget they ever worked with me.
Well, I've shadowed you, which was a pleasure. But I was literally like, oh, yeah, I forgot. We did work together in that capacity.
That's right.
Yeah, man. We sure did. I'm a tyrant. I'm pretty sure you wrote a letter to HR.
Well, you know, no, honestly, it's really funny because I know when you guys first approached me about that, I remember reading and I remember I got it in my email like as I was stretching at the gym and I started reading it. And I was like, I'll finish this when I get home. And I was like literally walking in the parking garage and I was laughing. I was like, this is so good. Yeah, it was so well done. And like, you know, it's just so amazing how talented my friends are.
Oh, that's so nice.
Well, you're so kind to say that.
That's true.
Yeah.
The big headline is she considers us friends. Say about that, Rob. We just went up a notch socially. All right, back to your thing, Rob.
Okay. Episode 6, season 3. So Rich and I, we watched the episode. We've rated the episode. I don't know if you've heard the podcast, but we do a rating system where we give it like a full beard is a good episode. So anything less than that's like a goatee.
Yeah, clean shaven is awful.
Got it.
Right.
So we rated it and we thought it'd be fun to, without telling you what we thought, is to sort of get your thoughts. Elena Huffman, of course, played Abaddon, but she doesn't come on the series until, season 8?
Something like that, yeah.
So we've got a while, but she's a good friend of ours, so we're inviting her on to be a guest reviewer. So I'm curious what you thought of the ghost ship and all that stuff in this episode.
So it's
Right, just so you know, full disclosure, Rob and I are not going to tell you what we thought till after you review it. We've already done our review.
Got it, yeah.
So you're on your own.
So is it all-encompassing, like story, performance, photography?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Think of it, like you're giving your New York Times review of this episode, all facets included.
So I would give it a 7.
Okay.
I thought a lot of the photography was beautiful. Now, was Serge the DP at the? He's since the beginning.
Yeah.
It's been the show's been beautifully shot. I actually did not catch the director. I meant to go back and look. Who directed this one?
It was a project.
Cole Hauser.
No,
somebody
we hadn't worked with him before.
Who had not directed.
It was a writer and a director that we hadn't worked with before.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can we discuss the accent?
Yes, do please.
Lauren Cohan's accent?
The woman. Bella?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's sort of like it was there and then it wasn't.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah, Rob has made the same comment,
okay,
by
that's
the way. And again, you're not. So you're on safe ground.
No, she look, I think she's lovely, but turns out she was raised in England.
Oh.
But she's like both. She's like American and English, but she can, you know. So it's technically not a fake accent, but it sounds like it is.
Yeah, Rob said this exact same thing, Elena, so don't feel bad. Because Rob was like, God, I was thinking she was doing a bad British accent. So I looked her up and found out she was British.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
My first thought was like, yeah, if I were, you know, she was young, you're auditioning. You know, you get on a show, and I think she did. She was a recurring character, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's what we can't figure out. And so I don't know if you noticed this in the episode, but Rob and I did. She gets series regular credit in the episode. It goes Jared, Jensen, her, and then guest starring and people.
Oh.
So I don't know what kind of deal she was on, but for a hot minute, and you know, Rob and I have been involved in this show doing a convention, I mean, since the dawn of time.
Yeah.
I had no idea that there was ever anybody other than Misha and then Shepard who was considered like a regular.
And then in the very end, Alex.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And then Pellegrino, I guess, was in there at one point too. But nonetheless, that's early on, she was a regular.
And to our listeners, a lot of that just happens to do with the kind of contract you're on. So she might have been on some kind of serious regular contract.
Yeah, but she would have to have been, for that credit, she was not a guest star, right?
Like, it's very rare. Yeah.
Yeah, that's rare, especially with Supernatural.
Do you know her at all?
No. She's Walking Dead, right? She runs Walking Dead. Yeah. I loved her on The Walking Dead.
I love her on Walking Dead too.
And she's solid on The Walking Dead. She's very endearing. She reminds me a little of Trisha Helfer, who's a good friend of mine.
She reminds me of you.
We interviewed Trisha. Interviewed Trisha for this show podcast.
We did.
Yeah, because she was on Supernatural. She reminds me of you a little bit, Elena.
Her. What's her name?
Lauren Cohan.
Lauren. Yeah. We've never met. I don't think we've ever met.
By the way, real quickly, update, directed, Rob, you're wrong, not directed by Cole Hauser, directed by Cliff Bole, or Bole.
Never thought it was Cole Hauser, but yeah.
Well, that good, because you were wrong. All right.
Good thing. So the accent was kind of distracting. I could put it aside, and this is like not a negative thing, I don't know why, but Ace Ventura like kept popping into my head when they were like all dressed up at the cocktail party and the water coming out of them.
Dude, that makes total sense.
That's funny.
That I can absolutely see the parallel.
Right, okay. So yeah, it was like, what is that? I was like, oh, Ace Ventura. And then I was like, that's weird. That's a weird thing. And then we went somewhere else and we came back and I was like, Ace Ventura. Now, the older actress hitting on Jared's character.
Yeah.
You know, as I am aging, so like I said, this last episode of Riverdale is a complete departure of my character, and it's very forward kind of sexually, and I have no problem playing that type of character, but it was just like, it's not what I signed up for. And so it's kind of interesting as we get auditions, like she clearly had to know that this was the character she was playing, and like, it's just I think that might have been awkward.
Yeah, I felt awkward for her, for sure.
It felt dated, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's what they did. But like, for starters, she's a lovely older lady. And obviously, I think Michael O'Shea knew our sound guy, knew her personally and thought she was like, and she's a lovely person, you know, with a huge resume. So it's a bit of a broad assignment, you know what I mean, for this whole gimmick.
Yeah, it felt a little gimmicky. And like, I feel like, it served the storyline, the plot line. But I think that's what Supernatural does so well, is it sort of blends in these like little funny moments. Like, actually, one of my favorite moments in it is those little moments that everyone loves that Jensen does when she was saying something like, go, do you need like instructions? Like,
Yeah, that was funny.
right.
It was so Jensen, and it was really cute and endearing and snarky. And I thought that was a really sweet moment. But overall, I mean, it satisfied that early formulaic storytelling of Monster of the Week, you know, hot girl, young guys. But I thought they were really solid in it.
Jared Jensen?
Yeah, always.
Yeah, I think that's also our takeaway is, they're
also the thing
good.
You pointed out about Serge, I think, is worth noting. Like, RDP was so good that he made this show, it always looked good. No matter what, it just looks great. And it goes a long way. You look at other shows being made around that same time, they don't look so hot.
I was going to ask.
No, they did not have the edge.
Yeah, I wondered, you're so right, Rob. Like, there's a quality of craftsmanship there that's just like almost a little superior to the story, and it just levels up everything. And right. I think
100%. And that, that plenty of times the episodes are great and his work is on par with it. But still, to Rob's point, I think Serge's work elevated the show from everything else that was on the network at the time.
Agreed.
It just looked 1,000 times better and edgier and cooler.
And I wondered this while I was watching it. I didn't go back and look. Maybe you guys know. I'm thinking they were shooting film at that time.
I think they were still.
It would have at least been in that transitional phase. Because at that time I was on Smallville. And we were, the last season of Smallville, we switched to digital. And I think that was around that same time frame. So film just has such a beautiful quality. And digital's gotten there, particularly with all the techniques that have come into place. But I also feel, I thought it was really beautiful. I thought the story was fun.
I have to say, and now that we sort of have your review, I'll let you give a final. So 7 is your number.
7 is my number.
Rich, do you have a scale that she could do it on? She could rate it on?
Okay, let's do it on, let's see. Elena, Like if we were going to do a difference.
It would be,
Like, what's something you love, Elena? Like, you know, Rob and I, we love face
hair.
Like, if you were gonna, you did seven. Seven what? Like,
size of a heel. Size of a heel. Yeah, like
heel.
Like platform being like the best.
I was gonna say how many olives in your martini, but yeah, but sure.
Oh, like, well, you really know Elena.
I feel like mine would be like sneakers, like
great. So
okay,
like how many quality sneakers is this?
How many, you know, how like many Jordans is sneakers? It?
Yes. Right. How many pairs of Jordans?
Seven. I don't know.
Okay, yeah, seven Jordans.
Seven's fine. So we're going to seven Jordans. You got seven Jordans.
Seven pairs of Jordans.
Seven
like good
pairs
one.
Of Jordans, which is technically 14 Jordans. But yeah, seven pairs of Jordans. To Rob's point, if you had a different measuring stick, if you'd seen a couple of the home runs we've seen, your seven was honest. I also think it's generous given what the show had done previous to this. But you were all the things that bugged you.
Also bugged us.
Either bugged Rob or me or both of us. So, I mean, we're...
But you come back when we're on season four or something and come rate an episode that maybe is a little better. And I think you might be more impressed, you know, by... Not that you weren't, you know, you watched it and you gave it a seven Air Jordans. I mean, that's good. That's a lot of Air Jordans.
Seven Jordans.
That's a lot of money.
Seven Jordans.
It is a lot of money.
That's interesting. And side note on that, like the first thing that kind of I thought about in the positive was Serge. And I don't know if you guys know this, but when I first came on Supernatural, he was the director. He was the first director I worked with.
Oh, no way.
I did not know
that. And it was
that.
His first episode.
Did
so
he end up,
I,
how many
awesome.
Did he
I feel
end up,
like I have a really special connection with Serge.
Yeah.
Well, that means he cast you essentially, right?
Yeah.
Like he...
In the actual room, it was Phil and I believe Adam Glass. But yeah, I mean, ultimately it would...
Yeah, because that's right. Serge would have been shooting the previous episode.
Right, right. Jeez.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Elena.
And doing this. You'll have to come back and do it again.
Come back sometime in season four.
You don't have a choice.
We'll pick a really good episode for you to do.
Okay.
Yeah, because we're going to get to you when you're actually in the show, but
it'll be a while.
It's going to take a while.
So you'll have to come back before. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Elena Huppin, thank you. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Guys.
Thank
so
you so
nice
much.
To see your faces.
Nice to see your face, too.
So nice to see your
I'll
face.
I'll see you guys soon.
Okay, for there sure.
All right. Bye.
You can sense it calling out to you.
New reality seeks you.
Join the journey to save Anomaly.
Place where sound is magic. The only way to enter the world is by looking inward.
Along the way, you'll learn potions, chants, and enchantments that will help you both in that reality and yours.
So, answer the call and let your campaign begin.
Featuring the voices of Ruth Connell from Supernatural and Dead Boy Detectives.
There are ordeals ahead, yet with guidance, you will face them head on without fear.
Todd Stashwick from Star Trek Picard and 12 Monkeys.
When the time arrives, wherever your journey takes you, be there with no attachments.
And R&B singer N.C. Gray.
There are worlds, realms, dimensions, and realities beyond yours.
Anomaly is a role-playing meditation podcast that takes you into a world of magic and fantasy. You'll be invited to imagine yourself in scenarios such as learning to cast a tranquility spell or exploring a land vanquished by a dragon, but all connected by a shared mythology. The goal of guided fantasy role-playing meditations are to help you cultivate a sense of wonder, curiosity, balance, and joy in your inner world. Role-playing meditation is a form of escapism and relaxation, as well as a creative outlet for the imagination. The first campaign is an introduction to the world of Anomaly, its lands, magic, and secrets. In the 8 chapters, you'll stretch your imagination, learn to center yourself, offer forgiveness, find confidence, relieve stress, and stop racing thoughts. Your true self will emerge, allowing you to manage your goals and dreams without confusion, distrust, or self-doubt. You can find it on Spotify, Apple, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Or visit seekanomaly.com to learn more Anomaly spelled with an I-E, not a Y.
Seek Anomaly. Hear its magic.
A returning guest, Michael Lachey, has worked as a supervising sound editor on many of your favorite shows and my favorite shows, including The Winchesters, Walker, Arrow, and Smallville. And in addition, he worked on all 15 seasons of Supernatural. Welcome back, Michael.
Thank you very much, Rob. And thank you, Rich, for having us back. That was good.
Absolutely. I'm just looking at your roster. And obviously, we've had you on before, mm-hmm. and we've known you for 15 years, yeah. But you're Mr. CW, dude. Is there anything on CW you don't have a hand in? Holy smokes. That's a lot.
That was kind of true for a while because I was on when it was still the WB and we did the big, I don't remember I told this, but when they announced the WB channel, they put a big Michigan J frog up on the water tower at Warner Brothers and set off fireworks and stuff from it and all this. And that was a really weird time because it was a little overprimed. So yeah. So the fireworks were a little bit big and the speaker system were playing Hello My Baby, Hello My Honey, you know.
Oh my God.
And it was so loud. Everyone went, well, that was a lot. It was cool. But yeah, we've been on since first shows on. Yeah.
I think we need to go dig up some sort of stock photo of the water tower with Michigan J Frog on it. I've never even seen that. That's hilarious.
It was there for the one big opening day and then unbolt everything, take it down and see what holes they made in the water tower. It's pretty cool.
Oh my God.
So listen, we have like your last time you were on the show, this podcast, people just went nuts because your information was probably the least asked about and most surprising, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
Because people don't even know, you're so the man behind the mask that people don't even know that they're hearing an artist's work. Does that make sense?
That's very nice. But yeah, I think you're completely right. It's like being musicians and studio musicians where you have, you know, studio musicians, you go, yeah, well, that's the sound I really want, but you don't know what that is until you really look at the liner notes. And actually tells you more than supervising sound editor and sound editor and dialogue editor and things like that that you might see on credits. It doesn't tell you what the process was or what the development was with the producers and with composers to get the show the way we all wanted it, which I forgot until I looked at it again how fat this episode is, in my opinion. There's just so much work in it to lead you into visuals. Especially.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly what Steve put on he pointed that out in the question list. Like how much of your work guides the viewer towards what they're about to see?
Yeah. The sound really shines in this episode. It's one of the few things that really stands out as something we really enjoyed in this episode. Things like you hear the ship before you see it.
Right. And that we would have a very specific tone of wind that came in each time that ship might come around the corner or is even in there. In the shower scene with the ghost, it's actually just in there just a little bit at the very top where you're expecting everything to be fine. You just feel it. And then, I mean, that's a good call because when we're in the car driving after coming up out of the main title, you hear the wind whistling in through the car, which we usually didn't play because it kind of gets in the way of the dialogue sometime. But right at the very top, you're hearing that right there at the top, like, oh, there's something that's pushing its way in.
Wow. You
know? By the way, may I say you're the Mel Blanc of wind coming through the window of a car. Holy cow.
That's funny.
That's great.
Mel Blanc, listeners, was the voice of all the characters on the old, the Bugs Bunny characters. And the
also in the WB family.
WB family, yes. All those characters.
There we go.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
He did all those WB Droopy cartoon characters.
Yep.
So here's a question. And this is just a couple of guys talking. It's just
great.
Rob and Rich and Michael having a conversation. What is your opinion? What is your opinion of the episode? Forget your art and your involvement. Out of all the Supernatural episodes, and you've been around for all of them, what did you think of this one?
I think that this one was one that when it first turned over, we were kind of really kind of going, okay, it doesn't feel strong. But then it became more, especially when the music came in, and then it became more and more interesting and then became tighter and faster paced as the show went on. Because you're laying a lot of story work for Bella's character and the relationship that you have back and forth. You have some great reveals. And it plays much better than I remember the process of doing it. You know what I mean? Because sometimes you step away in time and you go, wow, we did a lot of work in there that I just don't remember because it was so long ago. You know?
It's funny because, you know, in Rob's character, Chuck, references work that he is. It's Chuck, right? It's not, you don't know your God at that point, right, Rob?
Right. The prophet, Chuck. Yeah.
Right. Yep. And Chuck is like, oh, yeah, sorry about Bugs and the ghost ship. And you know, so Bugs has always had a bit of a bad rap, right?
Right.
We got to Bugs in season one, and both Robin and myself were like, okay, it's fine. You know, didn't strike us as bad. This one seemed, for us being new viewers, seemed to struggle more than your average episode of Supernatural. Because, and it's sort of an unfair advantage or disadvantage, seasons one and two of Supernatural are near perfect series. I mean, they're phenomenal.
Yeah.
And then you get into season three and you're also doing great work. So obviously it doesn't take much of a bump to be a speed bump, but it seemed to drift a little away from the strength of the original series. And I'm wondering, certainly the design of the sound and the music, as you're saying, really does help it because it's taking, it's picking up a lot of the slack.
It uplifts it. I think you're right. Cause it's taking, it's making it part of the world. Even if the story itself seems a little outside, like where are we going with this back and forth, but there's also still the bits and pieces of the humor and of stuff that were just a sense of foreboding that went to and from that actually plays much better in hindsight.
Right.
But there are some scenes that just seem, I mean, you can't say that it's long because they're laying a lot of story. They really are on this episode for different characters.
Right.
Yeah, they're setting up a lot of what's to come by the relationship with Bella, you know, setting that up and her double-crossing them kind of leads us into the next episode.
And what did you do for the building of the ship sound? It's like you had to do a mini Master and Commander every time you suddenly see this ship. How did you go about putting that together? Because it seems incredibly complex.
Yeah, with my supervising effects editor, Mark Meyer, he and I had to do a lot of it blind because we didn't see the visual effects, Rich, until the last day.
What?
Yeah.
Whoa.
And then only some of it.
Well, how would you know where to, I mean?
We did it by guesstimates. And so you have, I mean, in the ancient days, they'd have marked on the film saying it's going to start here and you'd see a start mark and then it's going to end here for when it's going to come around the corner. So we instead decided if we just created a peak to have a good guess of where the peak would be, to have creeks and wind come up at a specific point, we can move that whole thing just a little bit to left or right, you know, or if you prefer the term, as Bob Singer would say, toward breakfast or toward dinner, up and down in the show, to be able to sync it so that when it comes around the corner, you go, oh yeah, okay, now I feel the sense of movement on it. But we had a lot of layers of slow motion fabric movement to do, like the sails are still moving. Even though it's in a distant shot, you want to feel it because you want it to be big. Even though it might be less than a fifth of the size of the screen going by, you want it to feel big and have quite a bit of impact. And then we would always lead it in with a thunder and a rumble because your own gut knows that is a presence from the real world that's coming across to what's now a supernatural world.
No, you have to. Did you build the fabric yourself? Meaning, like, did you guys go out and record that, or did you have it in a vault somewhere?
Some of both. So I think we did. I think Mark and I both recorded using like some muslin, just like some slow flaps, and then put it in, and then just tweaked it with a lot of reverb and stuff on the top of it. And then they added more on the stage when we saw how far it was. So you had a sense of movement, but not we're right underneath the sail and hearing it shudder. Right.
Yeah. Because there's a difference between if we're watching a real movie or TV show about an actual ship going by, but this is a ghost ship.
Right.
So it's again, adding the supernatural element into it.
That's a good call, Rob, because we talked about this before, that there's voice that we did with voice actors in on the ship too. We had Mike Corbett and Art Kimbrough were on almost every episode as voice actors, who both of you actually have met at one point. And they were covering sometimes breaths and efforts that we talked about for Sam and for Dean, but they also have really great mid-range and low voices. And so they and I on the ADR stage were doing almost like just a circular breathing with the three of us back and forth with a little bit of chest voice. And it gives you that weird sense you go, I know there's something, and I think it's people, but it is scary. And then we have the women who were on the show, as well as the men, do whispers. And I both of you, actually, I've made you do it before on Supernatural, which is to do, don't do a hard syllable, do an A-H, and I stay away from S's, so it's, and that way you have just the guttural sound, but you don't have pops of T's and P's and things like that. Like, Rob, you've done your own backup singing, and you know you don't want necessarily super hard diction on backup. You want it soft.
Correct.
So yeah. It's the same idea. Then we might layer that, and then we'll library that. Because once you have it, you go, okay, that's the sound of ghosts.
Use this.
You know?
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, that's
amazing. Great. Yeah.
What about wood creaking? Because I know this whole ship has, like, you know, it sounds like a period piece ship. So it's got to have the wood creaking. How'd you do that?
We had some great library stuff, and then Foley helped too. So the old-fashioned way that still works the best is to use like an old chair or packing crate and then put rope on it. And then you turn it like as if you had a turnbuckle or something that would tighten it. And so that way you can have a little bit of creak of wood and
rope
at the same time.
Genius.
And then if you're lucky, you mic it far enough away that you don't hear the crispness of the rope. You just have creak, 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 creak. And that, and we found some really cool sounds over time that aren't necessarily really wood, but boy, they feel like it when you slow them down. So they just feel different.
So I have a mic position question for you.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about putting a mic far away because you don't want to get that crispness.
Yeah.
Let's say you're Mike Lachey and you're new. You just show up in the studio and you get that mic too close to it. So you're picking up more than you want. Do you have the ability with your mixing board and your other tools to dial it back to what you need? I mean, I guess the thought is put the mic where you want it so you're getting exactly what you want. You don't have to doctor it as much. But let's say it's in the wrong spot. Can you take away what you don't want?
It's easier now than it was when we started the show. Looking at time, over time, there are some fantastic audio plugins that help worldize it, as I like to say, or put it in the room better. But there's a certain thing that, like, Rob, the microphone you're using and the one I'm using has what's called a proximity effect. So as I'm talking, I'm going to lean into the mic while I'm talking. So as I'm leaning in, you'll hear a deeper and deeper sound, even though I am not actually changing the pitch of my voice and I'm coming back again. So that is a question of placement, so that when we're recording ADR or certain sound effects, it's like I'm trying to, in my head, go, how far away was the boom? How far away was this? And it's just like, can you guys just step a quarter of a step back? Because I said that to you the last session, Rich, when we were shooting stuff, because the shot is a long shot. And if you have crisp, tight audio in a long shot, it feels false.
Right.
You know,
right.
has to sound a little like it's in the room. And yeah, we can take time to do that. But if we can record it that way, we have less processing to do later. And, you know, you'll get on a really tight mic, even for sound effects. Here's a completely weird example. The sound of keys. When you're recording keys on a Foley stage, there's overtones to keys that are octaves above or like cymbals. You've got 2 and 3 octaves of sound levels that we can't hear, but the microphone is picking up. And so you have a huge amount of level hitting a microphone, but it's more than the mic can handle. You go, I'm not recording this very hot, but it's breaking up and has this ticking. Like, mind if I do it right now? It's like, you know, it has this tick that comes.
Yeah, right.
So here's a trick that we did years ago, which is put like a paper towel tube, you know, that like the center dowel of a paper towel over the microphone, and put cotton in the tail end of it. So the cotton cuts back, like a voice mask would, cuts back some of that super high end, the stuff that's 15,000 hertz, 20,000 hertz, and the next octave at 35 and 40, the stuff that we can't hear that drive dogs and bats crazy. But that signal is actually being printed by the microphone and even can be recorded. So you might wind up with a really signal that's too hot, and the keys are like, wow, that's so bright. Can you take it down? Can you take it down? Well, sometimes it's because of how it was recorded.
And that's so that tube, cardboard tube process, why that versus, say, a traditional windscreen? Like, you know, how does that help?
That's a perfect question. So a traditional windscreen is flat, so it has a flat curve. So I'm trying to get rid of the way that a directional mic cancels other things around it. I'm trying to get just the sound in front of it. And then the cotton or a little bit of layer of cloth over the top of it just cuts that super high frequency back without changing the color of everything else, without EQing it out.
Right.
It physically takes it out just as a piece of cotton. I mean, this is a good episode on this show when the people are drowning in dry, in dry. And it's like, you don't want that. You want a wet sound. So it's like, ask the voice actors and the actors themselves, put a little water in your mouth, but try not to choke, right? Because that's really hard to do when you're making multiple takes. So that then sip some water so your mouth is as wet as possible. So you have that slapping, snapping sound that you go, oh yeah, that's water, you know, without actually having water sitting in the top of your mouth or on your tongue is actually a good way of doing it. But it's really hard to breathe around that without swallowing it. But, you know, underwater scenes we've done on the show a number of times and stuff. And so doing the, like, you know, underwater of someone choking with their mouth closed.
Right.
The easiest way I'd explain it to voice actors is drop your jaw. I mean, you guys remember vocal training? They said if you want to be able to hit a higher note or just warm your voice up, drop your jaw like you're eating an apple at first. Just kind of like you get that total A that goes all the way down into your chest, and then just close your mouth without A open, still open. And so, Rob, I'm going to make you do it. So now just do the same thing. Like you're just like hold without air coming out of your nose, make a sound. Perfect. But a lot of people can't do that because in their head, they want to go. It's just it's just a cough. But if your vocal path is open, it gives you the really big fat sound, which is kind of cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
You mentioned the omni or the directional microphone. Do you guys ever need to record in a room for anything? Forgive me for saying the term wrong if this is wrong, but an omnidirectional mic, a mic that's picking up the whole space versus focusing in on one area?
Sure. Absolutely. You'll find that a lot of the lavalier or wireless pack mics you guys are wearing, sometimes they're an omni and sometimes they're directional. So that way, if that microphone is up close to the top of your chest, you can turn your head side to side and not feel it go off axis. So you want more of an omni if the person does a whole lot of head movement in the scene. So you don't have the swing of I'm over here and then suddenly it's on and back and forth like that.
Oh,
you know,
interesting.
So, you know, the mics we're using are extremely directional right now for the podcast. But if you turn off axis like this, you'll hear quite a bit of difference. You'll hear it bouncing off the room until I come back on it again. So maybe we could, you know, sometimes you'll split the difference. But yeah, Rich, a lot of recorders and recordists, just like for music, are doing a lot more with multiple microphones and in some cases, even a 5-1 microphone picking up total ambience in and around something. So you have that for worldizing.
Right.
Well, then do you ever do off mic stuff on purpose?
Oh, absolutely.
Example, so you want a Dean in another room. Do you have him do it over there like that?
Half the
or
time.
Or do you not?
Usually not. If it's ADR, no, because I might split the differences back up a little bit so we get that off mic sound. Because again, if you're too close, it'll sound too present, but you don't want it so roomy that you can't get rid of that room. Because if it's the wrong room to match into, you're stuck. You're pretty much stuck with that.
You also don't want to lose the information, lose
the clarity,
the actual line he's saying. Yeah. Yeah. And then you can manipulate it in post.
Right. I mean, it's kind of like, I know this stuff you guys know, but it's like when you're singing with a handheld microphone, you're going to do a little bit of work by yourself, or even if the microphone is in one place, you lean back and forward into it, knowing what your vocal characteristics are going to do in this moment. Maybe you want to give it so that the mixer doesn't have to lower it while you're hitting a louder passage. You just pull yourself back and forth away from it.
Right. So, there are lots of different water sounds in this episode. You've got harbors and showers, rainstorms, bathtubs, drownings. There's got to be a lot of work differentiating those things. So again, was a lot of that just catalog stuff that you already had?
Some of it is. I mean, I myself and Mark, if we're going somewhere on a trip or visiting family or going far away, sometimes we'll bring a remote recorder with us, just small ones.
Oh,
so
wow.
If you just suddenly hear something, you just pick it up and start recording with it. So some of the water for, I think for this episode, probably are things that I had recorded, Mark had recorded, and then library, because there's a lot of really great stuff in library that you want to be able to hear. Like rain is very difficult to record sometimes because it's a very wide spectrum sound and it also has different widths. So you don't want to be in a scene. A good example is the actual rain behind people's dialogue is going to be recorded straight up the middle because it's probably mono. So you want to make sure you have some of that that fills the rest of the scene that's straight up the middle, and then you want something to give it width now so that you can hear it in stereo or even in surround to go, wow, it's, I can hear those, the bushes, you know, the raindrops hitting the bushes behind us, which is a cool right. sound. And it just feels like, well, yeah, that's real. I'm really in a space right now. But when we did the scene in the bathtub with the green water that starts coming out and then it right. changes.
And the hand comes out.
Yeah. And the, and, yeah. and there's the drain. You hear this, the drain itself even changing tone. You hear the water changing tone and become thicker as it's going to green. So it starts in one pitch and then it changes a little bit as the green starts coming out. It's like, okay, so that you just kind of feel that going by. Then it went as quiet as possible for a beat that you want that everyone to lean in going, I know something's going to happen. Scare me if you need to. I'll be okay with it. And then the timing cut and put together is really well of at the same beat, the hand comes out, a music sting hits, and you hear this big water slurp as well as a grab all at the same moment, just a couple of frames apart, just tenths of a second apart. So you have a little bit of definition of bam, 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 that just hits you even harder and makes you sit back in your chair. So the best way to accomplish that, and that goes back to Hitchcock and before, is the quieter you go before your scare moment, the more room you have to make that scare loud and feel louder. It doesn't have to be louder than anything else in the show, but it has to feel louder.
Interesting. Interesting. That's such a specific noise, the hand coming through the water. Like, how do you, I would even not even know how to build that. How do you, like, that, like, I don't even know, it's, you know what I mean?
Yeah, some of it's done in Foley, but Mark did a lot of it with a whoosh and a water, like, as if you took your hand and slapped it through water really quick, so you get this kind of curl through it. Mm-hmm. But some of it isn't the sound that you think it is, because your eyeballs are saying, yeah, that's water. But so there's some other things in it that are maybe a little animalistic or things like that, just kind of a shock, or something that has an arc to it that feels even more like a grab. But before that, you had three drips, you know, even though you don't see them, they're off camera. While you're going, oh, this, the only thing you hear is those drips. You go, something's going to happen.
Not good.
You know, it's not going to be good.
No. Yeah.
So you're starting from scratch like that.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that in this episode, because there's a lot of people barfing water. And I can't imagine a world where you used any of that production sound, right? That's all kind of useless.
Some of it's actually okay, because you get the sense of their voice in it, and because they're actually doing some of it. So we'll do that, and maybe we'll open and close heads and tails of the takes so that maybe the rehearsal is actually cleaner, you know, or maybe just the, you know, what if you've got the water in your mouth and director – off camera say, okay, everybody ready? You good? And you hear, you know, someone to say, yeah, I got this at this moment. Maybe that's right. The best sound ever, you know, because it's being done without having to face camera, but you're still mic'd really well.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like the whistle performance anxiety thing, Richard. I mean,
So you do maybe use some of that.
Yeah, we'll use some of that, and then we'll top it either with voice actors or with sound effects. Gurgling and spilling water isn't that hard to do. It's just hard to record. You know, you can do that on a Foley stage, and you've got, if you're lucky, you've got a pit that, the question is really, where does the water fall?
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Because if it's hitting a metal thing, that ruins it, because now you're hearing it hit a metal thing. Right. Like, it's got to land somewhere. Like, you don't want it to land on what it's not landing on in the space that it's landing. So, like, in the car, it's landing on the floor mat or the seat or whatever. So, whatever you're recording, it's got to mimic that sound, correct?
That is true. And the opposite can be true, too, is that if you can make it fall away and have no sound, that might help you as well. There's a time when you're recording on set where if it's a rainy day, you have a drizzly day, which you had plenty of during Supernatural, they'll put a tarp over you, right, for the shots. And then above that, maybe you might have a rain curtain, if you're really lucky, if they had time to set it up, that just breaks up the raindrops a little bit, which might be, or a rain net, so that you can do the opposite while water is falling. If you have it fall into something that is soft and breaks up the impact of it, you won't hear it hit the surface below it.
Wow. Okay.
So that might be a way we do it. I mean, you could use something as simple as cloth, you know, a soft cloth or a flannel or something like that underneath it, so that the water hits it, but has a low thud sound, and that will get in the way. But you're manipulating the water up higher and closer to the mic so that it's going to be on axis, not off axis with the sound that you want.
And that gives you total and complete control on where the water lands on the screen.
Right.
Because you can make whatever sound you want.
Right. And then you do a pickup for what you see is on the screen. It's like, I just want to hear the sound of the water just hitting the top of the tub water for a beat. Mm. And well, Foley artists are so amazing sometimes, they'll just do it all at the same time. Just boom, it's like, okay, that was awesome. That was ridiculous.
That's amazing. It really is a strong, I mean, Rob and I reviewed the episode earlier and we both kind of picked it apart pretty harshly, except for the fact that it really is a sound extravaganza for you. Because of the water element, the ship element, you know, so many of the, like you mentioned, the bathtub, like the scare is a sound scare. I mean, it's
right.
It's one part visual, four parts audio.
I totally agree with you.
You know,
I totally agree.
It's really interesting because you and your team elevated the episode in a great way. And it certainly was an episode that needed the elevating. I mean, you were battling for all the scary stuff. You're battling Sam. You know, you're battling
Harold and Maude.
One of my favorite. I felt like there's a Harold and Maude through line in this show.
Which is a great thing because, I mean, Ellen Geer is just awesome.
Yeah.
She's just awesome. And
she is great. We didn't reference her name. I'm glad you said it. We were both saying we felt like she was,
a tough role to
lowered
play.
Herself to do this part because she's so good at it. You know what I mean?
Right. And it's one of those things that, you know, it's there. It seems like a cheap trick, but at the same time, she's playing it completely straight.
100%.
Yeah.
And Jared is mugging in a really good way.
Yeah.
No, 100%.
In a really good way.
No, she brings it in that role for sure. And, it's whatever was cringy about that sequence has nothing to do with performance at all. The performance is spot on.
Right.
Yeah. And also maybe because we're older now, but like I'm watching going like, she's a very pretty woman.
She's
a very attractive woman. Yeah.
She is.
I don't know. What's the big deal?
And she still has her place that her dad started there in Topanga, you know, which
is that right?
Yeah. The Theatricum Botanicum.
Oh, I've been there.
Wait a minute.
Seen a show there.
You don't know that?
No, her dad was the guy from the Waltons?
Yes.
Grandpa?
Yes. Will Geer, who was very smart in the 60s and 70s and smart and forethinking of it, take all the money you're making and buy property. Everyone else said to do it. So he bought, property along Topanga Canyon there. And there's this great Shakespeare in the Park space.
Oh, I've been there.
I know, it's awesome, too.
I've been there. I just didn't know that she was tied to it.
That's her space. That's her thing.
Wow.
That's genius.
Okay. I have a story to tell you guys about the show, which I know you guys will like, because it's about the ghost ship. We did a joke for the stage, which you guys will appreciate. The first time we saw the ship, when it finally was on camera and we saw it come in, I grabbed a piece of music out of my library to put it in as the ship comes around the corner. It's a piece that's written by Xavier Atencio and George Bruns, and it has the words yo-ho, yo-ho in it that comes across, and it played so great that there was a discussion on the stage for a minute or two. It was like, oh, could we just do and then... stronger voices and the immense amount of money it would cost to actually clear it in a day came back over and it's like, add more wind.
Yeah. Too bad.
But it was so great because I had a piece of it that was instrumental only. So it was just the drums, just the kettle drums in tune and stuff playing it that you actually hear on a certain ride at a certain place in Anaheim and other places around the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was so hysterical that we all just went, no, see, it was, let me see it one more time. This was all the producer. Let me see it one more time. All right, now that we have it in our heads, take it out.
Yeah, guy had to be painful to remove. But I tell you what, a lot more painful to pay the royalty fee than...
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Be more expensive than the entire episode. That's genius. Yeah, that's
awesome. If only this has been a Disney show.
Right.
Good joke, though. Funny. Well-timed joke.
That's amazing.
It's always such a treat to have you on. I mean, truly, I find your conversations and your recollections and your profession fascinating. So.
Well, thank you. It's great to talk to you guys, too. And I one more little thing that you guys know about real quick, which is Jared, which I think we talked about before, Jared having to do that Latin speech in the rain at the end.
So
that
lengthy.
Was a perfect area where it was absolutely pouring and everything. And so everybody's dialogue was replaced out there. But Jared had to do that entire Latin prayer in sync, cutting off camera, on camera, off camera, on camera. It looks amazing. You know, when you look at it, you just got to go, he's just going through all this. And there's deeply buried in there in the prayer is the name Castiel.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I heard that. Yeah. I heard that.
It's actually in there because that was one of the things in a prayer because it's a really, really long prayer. And I don't think it was ever used again because it's just so long.
It's so long. Yeah.
So, but it's actually in there. And we talked before about using music to let things happen. The water scene hit.
That's
where,
cool scene.
Where two guys go together. That is visually stunning. It was like we pulled things out of it effects wise because let the music and the visual take it, because it's lit so beautifully. You see this just terror of water going across between the two that hit and move again. And at the very end of it, you'll hear those vocal whispers that we talked about of like the ghost is disappearing and going away at the end of it. I thought you guys would find that interesting. If you listen, if you listen for it, it's there.
Very much so. Was that real rain in that scene?
I think it was Rain Machine, I think.
It's Rain Machine, yeah.
So they had to, I'm sure it had to be fake, Rob, because they would have not been able to control that amount the whole time. Right?
Yeah, yeah. So obviously it was a Rain Machine. I just thought that was funny because, like, of all the times you actually need rain, it's not raining.
But how hard is it to start? I need the rain to start right here.
Yeah, right,
which
exactly.
Is, which is
yeah.
true. That, and then you have to light it because, you know, lighting rain is a royal pain in the butt.
Vancouver rain will never listen. It's like non-union rain.
That's completely true. Completely true.
Thank you so much, my friend.
Michael,
thank you for being here.
I love having you on.
If there's any audio samples you think would work well in this interview, please send them along.
I'll shoot a few things along, and I'll talk to. I will happily shoot a few things along so that you have it to put in. It'll be kind of fun.
Okay? Great.
All right.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
This is Jared Padalecki stopping in to say hi and let you know that we've got to take a quick break.
Hey, it's Richard Speight, and I got a question for you. Why are so many dogs suffering with health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So, she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the frickin' planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And hey, all of this sounds fantastic, but the proof is in the pudding, and what I mean is, do the dogs like it? Well, I can speak for my own dog, Luna. She freaking loves it. And that's saying something, because she's no vacuum cleaner, you know? I've seen dogs eat a sofa. But not Luna. Luna is very persnickety, very high maintenance, especially when it comes to what she eats. And Luna went crazy for this food, and I'm loving what it's doing for her. She's got great energy, she looks fantastic, and I'm assuming she feels great. She usually just says, arf, but I'm going to interpret that as, you know what, Rich? Feeling pretty good. So how do you get this fantastic food for your dog? Go to badlands.com/SPNTAN. An order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsfood.com/SPNTAN today.
Hey, everybody. Richard Speight Jr. here. And if you know one thing about this guy, it's that I love boots. I wear them all the time. And that's why I love Tecovas, because they are the real deal. These boots are Austin-designed, Texas-tested, and handmade down in the boot-making capital of the world, León, Mexico. Tecovas are all about style, comfort, and tradition. And they're not just about boots. Tecovas is Western to their core. They offer a bunch of other head-to-toe Western staples, like trucker jackets, the perfect jeans to go with your boots, performance pearl snaps, cowboy hats, bandanas, you name it, they got it, and they will get you outfitted. Tecovas believes in Western for all, and you can feel it when you go into the store. You'll walk in. You're going to be greeted like family, unless you don't like your family, in which case you'll be greeted by people nicer than your family. They'll offer you a boot shine, unless you're wearing sandals, and they'll even hand you a drink. And it'll be the hard stuff if that's what you want. Rob Benedict, I'm looking at you. And right then and there, you can get custom fitted for a brand new pair of boots. You can even get custom leather stamping or branding that'll make those brand new boots truly one of a kind. All you gotta do is stop by Tecovas and get into your new boots today. But Rich, I can't make it into a store. They got you covered. Just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots as well as free returns and exchanges. And they ship right to your door. So get on over to Tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Thanks for listening. Now, back to the episode.
Just what we were saying off camera, I want to say it again. He's my favorite guest that we've had on, and I can't wait till he comes on again.
I love having Michael on, and yeah. I'll tell you something, Rob, and you and I did not sidebar this, so I'm saying this raw, fresh, and real. Mm-hmm. And you can tell me if you agree. But okay. After interviewing him about this episode, I like this episode more.
Yes, totally. Me too. Me too.
Now I'm like, oh, man. Yeah, he's right. These sound bits. And, oh, my God, the design. And, yeah, that was scary.
I heard us both agreeing with things that at the beginning of the podcast we were saying almost differently. And he was like, you know, that great scene when the brothers collide and, you know, when we both were like, oh, that was great, actually. That was a great scene.
And then
great
the hand moment. Coming out of the top, like, yeah, that was scary.
That was very scary.
That's the problem is like, we've loved so many Supernatural episodes so much that if it doesn't meet our incredibly high expectations now, we're like, boo.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, this had a lot of elements that were really cool. Was it, I'll stand behind our reviews because we do them in real time and speak from the heart, but there's certainly elements of this episode, certainly everything Michael and his team brought to the table are outstanding pieces of work and work very well.
And things you take for granted too, that, you know, like the sounds of the different waters, like I couldn't even begin to imagine to how to build that.
No, and the ship coming around the corner. I mean, the layers of a ship that has human voices, water, wind, fabric, and wood and rope.
Great episode. It's one of my favorite episodes.
You know what? I'm going to give it a Stapleton on a Stapleton. No, and then you have like the two brothers coming together. That was a cool effect. I did notice like at the end of the episode, and I'm kind of bored, and he has the modern brother and the leader of lead singer of NXS kind of standing off.
Yeah.
And then when they crash together, I was like, well, that was cool.
That was cool. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into the mythology.
Mythology.
All right, phantom ships. Phantom ships are not to be confused with ghost ships, which are abandoned ships found floating at sea, often without explanation. Phantom ships are typically the haunted version. While the Flying Dutchman may be the most famous phantom ship, there are a number of haunted ship stories from around the world, and here are three of our favorites. Rich?
Also, let's not forget the Flying Dutch Oven, which is what happens if you share a lay-down bed with Rob on a long-distance first-class flight. Word on the street is you get the Flying Dutch Oven.
We've never, ever shared a bed on a plane.
No, I'm just referring to some of the stewardesses you've lured into your quarters.
That's so made up, but funny. All right, and here are three of our favorites. Rich?
The Cagliace, also called the Warlock's Ship or Enchanted Ship, is a legend from Chilota mythology. The story says the ship appears every night near the island of Chiloé, off the coast of Chile. It's said it carries the souls of all those that drowned at sea. Supposedly, it is beautiful and always accompanied by music and laughter. Oh, and also creepy dead people aboard.
Wow. And the music is, ironically, all done by...
The Grateful Dead.
Jay Gruska.
Oh, I guess the Grateful Dead, because we're talking about dead people.
That's funny, too. The Lady Lovibond. In 1748, the schooner set sail in celebration of the ship's captain's wedding. The ship was sabotaged by a man who also loved his betrothed. It crashed into the Goodwin Sands, sinking it and killing everyone aboard. Since then, it is said the ship can be seen sailing off the coast of Kent every 50 years. Now, wait a minute. The sabotage by a man who also loved the ship's...
The Lady Lovibond.
The ship's captain's... Betrothed?
The ship's captain's betrothed, like the woman he's about to marry.
I thought he loved his own betrothed.
No, if he loved his own betrothed, he'd be at home with her hanging out.
I thought he was like, hey, we have this in common, so I'm going to kill you.
Hey, we both have separate strong relationships with different individuals.
How dare you?
That makes no sense. The last one of these three things we're reading, the last one takes place on Open Water 2.
Ironically, you also starred in a movie called Open Water 2.
Well, I did, and let's see where this tidbit takes us. Open Water 2, which I think is actually the number 2, not T-O-O. It's the unfortunate story of a group of 6 friends and an infant who, in 2006, went on a yacht cruise in Mexico, only to be discovered by a local fishing boat days later adrift, with just 3 survivors, 2 adults, Amy and Dan, and the infant. Thrilling mystery surrounds how the other adults died. Supposedly, the 4 victims died from accidents or by killing themselves. One thing is for sure. All the men only wore socks covering their genitals.
Okay, so that's a real Easter egg.
That, what?
Because you were in that movie.
Rob, this is lore. We're talking about this is the mythology section.
Did you see
the rich promotes himself section.
All right. Well, Hand of Glory. Cutting off the hand of thieves or criminals was a common practice in many regions and cultures.
That's a bummer if you're in that region and culture.
True.
And do something with your hand that you shouldn't do.
Hey,
by the way, Rob, your nickname would be Stumpy right now because both your hands would be gone.
Why did I do?
Dude, with the stuff you pull.
What am I?
Oh, God.
Never stolen
One
anything.
Round of like, hey, nice to meet you. Hey, I can't help but notice I can see the small of your back in the chop. Ow. Oh, you know, ma'am, here, let me help you pull that chop. Ow. Oh, gone. No hands.
Wow. Well, if that's the case, then you would have no limbs.
That doesn't mean he says they don't cut off other limbs, just hands.
Well, that's why, but for you, it'd be the whole limb.
I'd lose my knee for some act of aggression.
You'd lose your arm, but keep your hand.
So right off my shoulder is a hand?
Yeah.
Okay.
The mythology around Hand of Glory is specifically European. More commonly, the severed hand accompanies a candle made from rendered fat from the same malefactor. When presented together, would render everyone in its presence motionless. Oh, boy.
Hey, Robbie, I got you this severed hand and this candle made of rendered fat.
Aw.
Hey, thanks, Rich. And then what I do is I depant you and put you in Times Square.
Am I still holding the candle?
Yeah. Rich, pull my pants back up. By the way, I think I did that in reverse. I should put you in Times Square and then depant you. Because otherwise, I've got to take a pantless Rob across the country, defecating all over himself as we ride in my Prius to New York City.
Why am I also defecating?
It's 5 days. Of course you're going to poop. We're not going to get there overnight.
So you don't have the common decency to put me in a bathroom.
You renounce it. You can't move. You're stiff as a board. You don't go, hey, I got to hit the can. You're like, ah, this is not. Oh, there we go.
You're mean-spirited. You know? All right. Tell us about directions on how to make a Hand of Glory.
Okay, for the kids at home, here's how to make your own Hand of Glory, as described in the Compendium Maleficarum, a witcher's guide written in 1609 by Francesco Maria Guazzo, or the Petite Albert. What? Both are available on Amazon. By the way, Rob has a part of a body called the Petite Albert, but I'm not allowed to say what it is.
Wait. Okay. First of all, no. Francesco Maria Guazzo goes by the name Petite Albert?
No, I think it's two different books, but I will tell you this. Rob's Hand of Glory has touched his Petite Albert. And I think everybody needs to know that. Rob almost fell out of his office chair. All right. A Hand of Glory also appears in the Harry Potter. By the way, I thought I was going to get the directions. I got all excited. I told Trey to play music. I was ready to say, you take one part rendered fat from your malefactor.
Yeah, you take your
petite Albert. Two parts severed hand. Like, I was ready. And it's not even here. I set up something that I can't deliver. Maybe on another episode, we'll read the direction on how to make a Hand of Glory. Anyway, a Hand of Glory also appears in the Harry Potter books and Neil Gaiman's Sandman.
I want you to call me Petite Albert from here on out.
I like the fact that your Hand of Glory is Petite Albert. I also like that you said if the hand were in a hole.
the Hand of Glory
hole. Glory hole.
All right. Not that we're not having fun already, but let's get into some fun facts.
Oh, fun facts. What could be more fun than what we've already talked about? These facts.
The title of the episode comes from a bit of sailor lore. Red sky at night, sailor's delight. Red sky at the morning, sailors take warning. Didn't know that.
Steve Hayes always says that. My father-in-law, Steve Hayes, he was in the Navy. So he uses that phrase a lot.
Okay. Meaning it's going to rain?
Yeah, if it's red sky at night, you're in for an okay day. The weather's going to be all right. Red sky at morning, bad weather's a-coming, man. You better batten down your hatches and swab your poop deck. Grab your Petite Albert.
Excuse me?
Use that Hand of Glory to swab your poop deck.
The next fact is one we've talked about. Sam, when performing the invocation to summon the captain's spirit, one of the names he cites is Castiel,
which is a foreshadowing. Sam calls Gertrude Miss Havisham. Miss Havisham is a character from the Charles Dickens novel Great Expectations.
Right.
That's an erudite reference. Well done, Sam.
The museum ball was filmed at the same location as the hotel in season 2's Playthings.
Huh. Ah.
There you go.
The cemetery at the end was built in Heritage Park, the same park where they built the old lady's cottage in the previous episode, Bedtime Stories.
Oh, okay.
There we go. A lot of fun facts.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a great episode, man. You know, we started out not loving the episode, and then I don't think we still love it, but we like it a lot more thanks to Michael Lachey and your Petite Albert.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's honestly, it's in my top five favorite episodes ever.
Now I've been laughing myself silly in our podcast. Maybe not the best episode ever, but a damn good podcast episode.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, we'll see you all at the next one.
Yeah, you will.
This episode of Supernatural features Jared Padalecki as Sam Winchester and Jensen Ackles as Dean Winchester.
Guest stars included Lauren Cohen, Robert Maloney, Ellen Greer, and Samantha Simmons.
Red Sky at Morning was written by Lawrence Andries and directed by Cliff Bowl.
Editing by David Ekstrom, music by Jay Gruska.
Executive produced by Eric Kripke and Robert Singer.
This episode originally aired November 8th, 2007. Piece of trivia, that's 1 week after the previous episode had aired.
Oh. Didn't know that. This episode of Supernatural Then and Now was hosted and executive produced by Richard Spade Jr. and Rob Benedict.
Produced by Stephen Hine. Written by Stephen Hine and Haida Holscher.
And edited and associate produced by Trey Booty.
What's up, Booty?
Music provided by Tim Wynn.
This episode was recorded with the help of Sonic Fuel Studios.
This podcast is from Story Mill Media.
Follow the podcast on Instagram and Twitter. Pretty. Follow the podcast on Instagram and Twitter. Pretty please. At SPN Then and Now.
And become a member of the podcast at patreon.com/SPN Then and Now.
Wouldn't it be a bummer if you had, like, Fix It, a podcast, and people tuned in to learn how to fix things, and that's not what it was. It was just you every hour talking about the fix.
The band, the fix.
1 hour a week, dedicated
Red to Sky at Night. All right, the Lady Loyabond in 1780.
Loyabond? It's not Lovey Bond?
Oh, is that a V?
Well, only modern, I mean, I guess if you're reading it in ancient Latin.
It's got that red, it's underline, and I thought it made it look like a Y. Okay. The Lady Loveabond in 1748, this schooner set sail in celebration.
Schooner. Oh, man. I was like, why is Rob lobbing to me? He always, I see. Because it's an unpronounceable word. All right. The Caluche.
Caliche.
Well, I mean, how do you say it? Caliche.
Did you see Steve's reaction when I spoiled it? I didn't know what was coming. You're like, the last one takes place in open water, too. And I was like, oh, I didn't realize it was going to be the plot of your movie. And I was like, oh, you're in a movie called Open Water 2. And Steve went, he's like, damn it.
I also think it is a creepy mythology. I think it's a wonderful film released by Lionsgate in the mid-2000s. Worth a rent. Starring a young Eric Dane. Pre Grey's Anatomy and The Last Ship.
And a young Richard Spade Jr.
Rich Spade, before I had kids.
Are you the infant?
I was a very baby face back at the time.
Oh.
I remember Rick Gomez went to the premiere of that movie with me. And I'm like, so, Rick, what do you think of the movie? Rick goes, I don't think any of you effers have kids. That's what I think of the movie. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, dude, I got a kid. And if my kid were stuck on the boat, like your kid was stuck in the boat, I'd be clawing the eyes out of everybody around me trying to get on that boat. And you guys were like, hey, our baby's on the boat. We should get back up there. I'm like, good point, Rick Gomez. It's always about the baby. That's the Rick Gomez motto. It's always about the baby.
Story Mill Media.